Okay, friends, here we are at Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 119A. We've been talking about the seventh ray activity, and we had some very good discussion on the value of the seventh ray. And its particular meanings. And we also are seeking to look here to note these combinations that are seen in a more macrocosmic sense, to try to note them in our own individual horoscopes. DK has been reviewing now some of these meanings. He's crossing over and looking at the relationship of the major triangles to each other. Now, what are these triangles? The triangles are particularly, at this stage of our consideration, Leo, Saturn, and Shambhala, Pisces, Uranus, and Hierarchy, and Capricorn, Mercury, and humanity. And there are interrelationships between them which are of interest. So here we are on page 447. It must not be forgotten that Leo marks the height of achievement for the human soul. This self-consciousness, Leo is of the fire signs, the sign most related to the consciousness aspect. And this is today stimulated by the Shambhala force now flowing into the center of humanity. So let's say this, that soul culture is stimulated by Shambhala. This inflow will continue its critical work until the Aquarian age, so rapidly coming into expression. The one-pointed attitude of the Leo person, or shall I call it, until in the Aquarian age, so rapidly coming into expression, the one-pointed attitude of the Leo person, or shall I call it, the self-centeredness, becomes the expanded consciousness and the decentralized attitude of the Aquarian man. So Shambhala is reinforcing not only the self-centeredness of some very selfish people, but also the expanding soul consciousness of the individuals who are subject to this type of expansion. And the soul consciousness is becoming ever more inclusive, and the Leo tendency becomes Aquarian. Well, really, at a certain point, these two signs do flow into each other and become reciprocal, and there are many advanced Leos who are very Aquarian in their nature, and Aquarian, advanced Aquarian individuals who have the full Leo potentials. Each of the opposites tends to give its gift or gifts to the other in this reciprocal relationship. Well, the one-pointed, the lowest level of Leo expression will expand to the middle level, and we shall have expanding soul consciousness, which is really group consciousness in the Aquarian age. When will this happen in the Aquarian Age? Well, perhaps we will have to wait until we reach the Venus portion, which is the last third of the Aquarian Age, before the full culture of the group conscious soul becomes widely possible. You can therefore see how full of promise is the future. The decentralized attitude of the Aquarian man, and actually the Leo individual, is advised to Leo, okay, Aquarian man, the Leo type is told to cultivate decentralization. That is one of the keys, the revealing point, and eventually the relinquished point. That indicates really the truly decentralized individual. In the Aquarian age, the power of the planet Venus becomes, well, okay, interesting. he goes on and starts talking about this. I wonder if it's in the same context. The power of the planet Venus becomes dominant, a dominant factor in the last decanate. The last 720 years or so, considering the matter arbitrarily. This I have already told you when we were studying that sign. Upon the reversed wheel, in the case of the spiritually oriented man and disciple, it is the first decanate under whose influence he comes, which is governed by Venus. Let's see if we can understand this. Because the reversed wheel, in the case of the spiritually oriented man, should be coming under Saturn in the first decanate. So I'm wondering if I'm understanding this correctly. The last decanate is the first decanate that the average man comes into, ruled by Venus, and then Saturn, with all of its difficulty, becomes the last decanate and the opportunity for a reversal. That's interesting, too, because if what I think of Taurus may be correct, then the first decanate is also ruled by Saturn, even though Venus would seem to be the normal ruler and does have some effect because of the Taurus, Taurus-sub-Taurus meaning of that first decanate. Upon the reverse wheel, in the case of the spiritually oriented man and disciple, it is the first decanate under whose influence he comes, which is governed by Venus. This should be remembered. Well, maybe I'm dense here, but Venus was the planet which we are told was responsible for the appearance of the individualized consciousness in man, so there is a strong connection here with Leo, because Leo was also responsible for the appearance of the individualized consciousness, along with Gemini and Sagittarius participating, and Cancer as well. In the Aquarian age, Venus will again have an analogous influence, only, let's see, what is this in combination with other influences and forces. Okay, Venus combined with other influences and forces. In the Aquarian age, Venus will again have an analogous influence, only with this difference that the emergence into manifestation of an increased individualism and self-conscious realization will be subordinate to the appearance of the first stage of an expanded consciousness throughout all humanity. The consciousness of group responsibility, it will be perhaps better expressed as a form of a group individualism. Well, there are some things said here which seem a little difficult to reconcile with what has been said before, because the reversed wheel gives us Saturn as the ruler of the first decanate, but from another perspective, Saturn rules everybody at this time because humanity is assuming discipleship, and because humanity is also approaching soul consciousness, which is represented by Venus, then in a way, Venus also rules everybody. So we have the average individual entering at 30 degrees under Venus, but also becoming responsive to Saturn. We have the disciple entering at 0 degrees under Saturn, but becoming increasingly responsive to Venus, the planet of the soul. So this needs to be sorted out a bit. This statement needs clarification. I don't think it's a typo, but the reversed wheel well, let's just say on the ordinary wheel, it is the first decanate under whose influence he comes, which is governed by Venus. But on the reversed wheel, it is the first decanate governed by Saturn. I think this is what had been previously said. So this is, if I'm interpreting it correctly, an apparent contradiction. We'll have to work that out. Venus was the planet which we are told was responsible for the appearance of the individualized consciousness in man. And this is the individualization process, this in combination with other influences and forces, and I did name some of the zodiacal forces. In the Aquarian age, Venus will again have an analogous influence, bringing in a type of individualization or individualism, only with this difference that the emergence into manifestation of an increased individualism and self-conscious realization will be, which is of course a Leo factor, right? A Leo factor will be subordinate to the appearance of the first stages of an expanded group responsibility. I suppose any time we come under the influence of Venus in the modern age, we are entering the group consciousness of the soul. And when we talk about group responsibility, it's a combination of Venus and Saturn, in a sense. Interestingly, both of them are rulers of Libra, the first, in a way, group sign. So a combination of Venus and Saturn. It will be perhaps better expressed as a form of group individualism. To a certain extent, we have that now, and in somewhat of a selfish form. So we have aggressive groups which are seeking their own welfare, but we need an expanded consciousness of these groups so they accept group responsibility, and that group responsibility tells us something, in a way, about Saturn in Aquarius. Responsibility connected with Saturn particularly, and the group always with Aquarius. So there are some, I think, slightly enigmatic statements in that last paragraph. I do remember running into that and wondering whether Master DK is trying to provoke some sort of perplexity and a search there. Certainly in Aquarius, for the reversed person on the reverse wheel, the soul is becoming a prominent factor, and the soul is powerful in Aquarius. The idea of the group consciousness of the soul and Venus go together. But it is still a decanate from 0 to 10, ruled, he repeatedly says, by Saturn. So we have kind of a Saturn sub-Venus influence in the first decanate, and for the average individual coming in through Venus from 30 degrees, there is a kind of a sub-Saturn influence because, as DK says, humanity as a whole is entering upon the path of discipleship, and Saturn is particularly the planet of discipleship. So therefore, behind all these events, the dim outline of a lesser triangle of energy can be seen, and this is a blend of three planets. And these produce a combination of energies of Ray 3, active intelligence, Ray 7, ceremonial order, Ray 5, concrete mind. I think we will recognize these. Let's see. We recognize the three rulers of Libra. And they are in reverse order. The active intelligence, these are not the rulers of Aquarius. The active intelligence comes in on the hierarchical level with Saturn as the hierarchical ruler of Libra. Ray 7 comes in via Uranus at the esoteric level, and Venus comes in with its Ray 5 representing the concrete mind at the exoteric level. Okay. It can be noted how this combination of energies, when playing upon Germany's soul ray of harmony through conflict and her first ray personality on the ray of power and the destroyer, responsive to Shambhala, as personalities can be, though not necessarily in a spiritual sense, is responsible for much of the present conflict. For the reason that the reaction of that country under the influence of its present rulers has been in terms of the material aspect and not of the spiritual. And we can see three hardline rays there. The Yeah, these are not exactly the Prussian rays that DK discussed. He called them rays 1, 3, and 5. And instead of ray 1, we have the 7. So, let's see here. Another triangle then is emerging, he tells us, and this triangle consists of the rulers of Libra. So we're talking about individualism in the age of Aquarius, a Leonian factor which is modified towards a group consciousness. I am perplexed by what he said there about Venus governing the first decanate on the reversed wheel. On the ordinary wheel, I can see it, and he does explain that in an earlier section. So sometimes when we run into difficulties of comprehension, we can temporarily hold the question and see if we can resolve it with further study and meditation and the further information that comes along. So we have Saturn, which activates the material aspect. It is opposite, in a way, the Aries soul of Germany. Interestingly enough, therefore interactive with it. The ceremonial order was seen in the type of rigid organization that the Nazis produced in many of their public events and in the method of organizing their army and society, and then the concrete mind, well indeed, the mind of Germany, I've always felt, has been on the fifth ray, and in this case, the concrete and materialistic mind, not the philosophical potential of the fourth ray soul of Germany that DK discusses. So there has been an inversion of the Shambhala force in relation to Germany, and its material aspect has been emphasized and not the spiritual aspect. And the three rays discussed under Saturn, Uranus, and Venus are all rays of the form. DK did tell us that if Germany ever had succeeded, it would have produced the most materialistic civilization that the world has ever seen. Certainly the way of discriminating the desirables from the undesirables was in relation to bodily form and the heredity of the physical body. So in the camps, they were putting to death those whose physical ancestry did not fit their ideals. It's as if all of the psychology arose from the physical form. And this is one of the great mistakes which materialistic science makes today, that consciousness is somehow what's called an epiphenomenon of the brain or of the material structure of thought. So this is a reversal of the truth as occultism sees it. Students would find it useful to reread some of the foregoing instruction anent the signs Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn so as to familiarize themselves with the nature, quality, and influences of this great triangle. We'd go back to page 435, which this great triangle expresses and through which humanity is being led at this time upon the forward along the path of return. The path of return is induced from above with aspiration from below, but the higher or the hierarchical triangle is drawing the triangle of humanity into its orbit, and magnetically the triangle of the soul from Sirius is being drawn into the orbit of the triangle which is impulsed by the Great Bear, namely Leo, Saturn, and Shambhala. In this connection, it is well also to remember that the series of triangles with which we have been dealing refer to and produce changes in the human consciousness. He is, in a sense, summarizing here, and not so much in the human form. The triangle represents the subtle aspect, and the square, the tangible or manifested aspect. We do have what we might call the, we have the triangle hovering above the square. Another series of triangles was also given on page 416, involving the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades, in that order, 1, 2, 3, and these triangles concern the spiritual aspect of the planetary life and of humanity. They, on their own level, they affect groups and great wholes, as well as other of the other kingdoms in nature. Humanity is of peculiar importance in relation to these triangles, because it is the destiny of humanity to transmit life to the subhuman kingdoms. Interesting about life, it seems to be an etheric type of energy in its lower connotation, humanity being the intertransmitting intermediary between the higher and lower kingdoms. And humanity really is the central focus at this time of a fourth initiation of our planetary logos, a subsidiary initiation, not a cosmic second initiation, which is looming ahead. With these triangles of supernal forces, and I suppose he means especially the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades, I shall not deal, because conscious response to their influence will not be possible until the time cycle of the third initiation arrives. Basically, he's telling us we are responsive to the stellar level in the truest sense at the time of the third initiation and beyond. I mean, there are lesser responses to the stellar level, but they are found in the personality and the true function of the stellar level to raise the soul into the spirit of man is not possible until the third degree is reached, and DK primarily is not writing for third degree initiates, though he drops many, many hints, which I think even initiates of the third and fourth degree could benefit from. I simply mention this influence so that you will realize that there is no real contradiction or discrepancy. Okay. Right, so for the reason that he does not take up in exhaustive discussion the work of the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades, though he does seem to give enough statements and hints so that we know something of their nature in a cosmic sense, but very vague, I would say. You know, we learn that there is a series of triangles uniting the Great Bear and the Pleiades, and I wonder if the seven solar systems is part of that triangle, or whether Sirius is also part of those triangles being formed between them. We learn about the relationship of the Pleiades to the heavenly men of our solar system. We learn much about Sirius and its initiatory relationship with our solar logos and also with our particular planet, and our particular planet is closely related to Sirius, just as it is to Taurus, only in different ways. So something is said about these great sources, but perhaps not in the kind of detail that can be given concerning the planets. I simply mention this influence so that you will realize there is no real contradiction or discrepancy. Still another enumeration of the triangles of energy emanating from the three major constellations is given earlier by me, and this again is correct and not a contradiction. So let's take a look at page 435. I guess he is, we've been faced with quite a contradiction concerning the decanates of Aquarius, and he talks about the difficulty of really discerning truth in the fluid area that he calls the decanate area. But let's look at esoteric astrology. Page 435, and he says this is no contradiction. What is he talking particularly about these triangles? Well, one did not necessarily see a contradiction. One just realized that he began to form triangles beginning at the zodiacal level rather than at the level of the three great constellations. Okay. So triangles of energy emanating from the three major constellations, though stimulated by the three great constellations behind them. And this is, again, correct and not a contradiction. In this group of three sets of triangles, making nine all told, with their interlocking analogies and lesser triangular relationships and with their points of fusion, you have held in a mystery of potencies the entire story, past, present, and future, of human evolution. This is a huge statement. So we have the, let's see which triangles he means here, because we've been reading these things, and, okay, in this group of three sets of triangles, where we have, how does he mean that, nine all told? Well, there is the Great Bear Sirius and the Pleiades, that's one. That's a series of triangles. We have the series of triangles Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn. I'm trying to figure out how he arrives at the nine. We have some other triangles involving the planets which distribute ray 3, ray 7, and ray 5. I think if we review this carefully, we will find the way the nine appears. We do have Venus, Uranus, and Saturn. These are the rulers of, these are actually the decanate rulers. This is interesting. These are the decanate rulers. Well, no, they are the actual, they're a mixture of the decanate rulers and the rulers of Libra. They are definitely the rulers of Libra. Venus, ray 5, orthodox. Uranus, ray 7, esoteric. And Saturn, ray 3, hierarchical. And two of them, one of them, ray 7, is the ruler of Aquarius, and two of them are active in the Aquarian decanates, decanate 1 from 0 to 10, and decanate 3 from 20 to 30, with Mercury taking the central decanate. Well, suffice it to say, he sums up these triangles, and he says three sets of triangles, I suppose in a way making nine members. But maybe there are, in each one of these sets, there are three triangles as well. We can certainly find many triangles here. We can do it this way. We can begin with the very first line of descent and say there is a triangle between the Great Bear, Leo, and Saturn. Then we can begin with the zodiacal triangle and say there is a triangle between Leo. Well, the other one was Great Bear, Leo, Saturn. Then we can begin with Leo and go down. Leo, Saturn, Shambhala. Those are two. And we can do that two times. We can do that three times, in fact, and we will have six. And then if we go across the board, we will have three more. So, at the risk of being tedious, at which I can be pretty good sometimes, I think I'll just write them down. That will be the thing to do. We can find easily the nine triangles here. And it says, in the mystery of these interlocking analogies and lesser triangular relationships, this group of three sets of triangles, making nine of all, with their interlocking analogies and lesser triangle relationships, so more than nine, and also with their points of fusion, which I suppose has to do with their microcosmic anchorage, you have held the mystery of potencies, held in a mystery of potencies the entire story, past, present, and future of human evolution. I suppose we have to include the human being. So let's make these quite big. Yeah, okay, let's do that. And we'll do this, right. All right, so now let us go down. Let us make nine triangles here and others that can be found within this set of 18 factors. Let's start with the Great Bear section. So we have the Great Bear, Leo, Saturn. Then we have the Leo, Saturn, Shambhala. And then we have Sirius, Uranus, Sirius, Pisces, Uranus, and we'll go down one, and we will find Pisces, Uranus, hierarchy. All right, we've got five, we've got four so far. Now let's go to the third aspect and its descent. We have the Pleiades, Capricorn, and Saturn, no, not Saturn, but Mercury. Then we have Capricorn, Mercury, and humanity. Now we will go across and work with these higher factors horizontally. And you have Great Bear, Sirius, Pleiades. Then you have Leo, Pisces, Capricorn. And then in a planetary sense, you have Saturn, Uranus, and Mercury. Well, there are nine. And there are many others that we can go horizontally. I wouldn't even want to write them all, but we can go horizontally and find the triangle, which we haven't used yet, Shambhala hierarchy and humanity. And then we can find microcosmic triangles that we would call the head center, the heart center, and the ajna center, and then going down to the very lowest level, we will find base of spine, center solar plexus, and throat center. We could descend on the vertical level in still another way. And we could add in this way, Shambhala, head center, and base of spine. That would be a triangle. I guess I should do this visually, but I think you get the idea here. Then we, beginning with the hierarchy, we'd have the heart and the solar plexus. That'd be a triangle. Beginning with humanity, we'd have the ajna center and the throat center. That would be another triangle. And perhaps there are ways in which certain diagonal lines and the lines of resonance could connect the three factors flowing downward. Yes, I'd like to see if we go just a little above. Here it is. This is the main chart. And it shows rays 1, 2, and 3. So we have done this. We have all the six horizontal triangles. Then we have like this, 1, 2, 3, beginning with Great Bear. Then beginning with Leo, 1, 2, 3. Then beginning with Saturn. Saturn, Shambhala, and the head center, that's one we haven't considered. Also Uranus, hierarchy, and the heart center, we haven't considered that possibility. And Mercury, humanity, and the ajna center. So from the vertical point of view, in each column, we can get 1, 1, 2, 3, 4. And let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Four triangles, and let's see. This is one triangle. This is another two. This is another, and this is another. Four triangles in each one of the vertical columns. So that's 4 times 3 is 12. And then horizontally we can get 6. So 12 and 6 is 18. So in the easy way of doing it, there are 18 possible triangles in this 18-fold chart or tabulation. And then there may be some other other ways of creating triangles there as well if we blend the different columns according to some of the rulerships. But anyway, I think what's important here is that we have in this mystery of potencies the entire story. Past, humanity, present, the soul in the Syrian line, future, the Great Bear line of human evolution. It goes from humanity to hierarchy to Shambhala. It is intricate, isn't it? It's intricate. But once we begin to see what's involved, so these over here are the first and highest 9. And to that we can add another 9, which are less high in the cosmic sense, and some of them are also lower. Very briefly, I would like to touch upon the fact that, as might be expected, the influences of Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn, which dominate the present world situation via Shambhala, the hierarchy, and humanity, are potent in their oft unrealized effect upon individual people. But we're told that Hitler had a lot of Leo in his soul chart. Pisces contributes to the general death and dissolution, which occurs at the end of the Piscean Age. And also of the prevailing world glamour of which Germany was the representative with its Piscean personality influencing so many others. Interesting that Germany and India, while they have reversed rays for the soul and personality, with Germany ray 4 and 1, soul personality, and India ray 1 and 4, soul and personality, have the same soul sign, namely Aries, though for Germany it's the Pisces personality and for India the Capricorn personality. This whole idea of the psychology of the nations is very, very interesting, and one can begin to see the leaders of the future studying these kinds of things, if they are occultists, and some of them could well be. You know, we've heard stories about certain of the great leaders having their occult links. There is a link here in Finland, actually, with the Marshal Mannerheim, who was the great general of the First and Second World Wars in Finland. And if Finland has independence at all, it's largely because of him. And apparently he had some kind of connection with Tibet and also with the Baileys. What that is has to be further researched, but it's surprising how certain people in power do have these occult links, which hardly anyone expects. Even Ronald Reagan, who I'm sure was a six-ray soul, believed in astrology. He was an Aquarian, and he says, well, there's a lot more to it than people give credit. He could get away with that kind of thing. He had, I think, some kind of maybe second-ray personality, just the reversal of the situation in the United States with its second-ray soul and sixth-ray personality. But he had the Aquarian energy strong, which gave him resonance with the soul of America, and he believed in astrology. And a number of the leaders do, but of course publicly they cannot admit that. So this Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn are giving the possibility of initiation, but also of a very dense materialism, followed by some, and the regimentation factor of Capricorn being strong in humanity. At this time, the what you would call the totalitarian factor, which I think is in a way very Capricornian, seeking conformity. Conformity by all to the state. And Pisces gives us death and dissolution, and yet redemption. And he also told us with Capricorn we have the crumbling of the mountain load of karma. Crumbling of the mountain load of karma. And with Capricorn, with Leo, we have the emergence of the dictators. And certainly the World War I period and much that followed it shows the same thing of the dictators, the men of will or men of selfish will. Although I'm remembering that Ataturk on the first ray, who used the Shambhala force in a very disinterested manner, amazingly disinterested, and who was praised by the Tibetan, was a Pisces individual with, I think, Scorpio rising. So he had, at least he had Scorpio related him to his country, Turkey. And Turkey had two water signs as its rulers, Cancer and Scorpio, Ataturk with Scorpio and Pisces. So it worked well for him, this wielding of the Shambhala force in a redemptive manner. Although I think not everybody in Turkey today agrees with that, still the reforms that he made in the religio-political structure of his country were welcomed by hierarchy. Now they seem to be, to a degree, under reversal. There's always a reactionary response to any attempt to move the human mechanism and human society forward. Okay, so they bring about changes in his life focus and in his centers, because the different astrological signs are associated with the centers, not just in terms of what part of the body they rule, and therefore what center is associated with that part of the body, but in additional ways as well. For instance, although Pisces rules the feet in traditional astrology, it also has everything to do with the heart center. And I think we can find different areas of the body, Taurus with the Ajna center as well as the throat. I think these different constellations rule more than one part of the body, or can be reasonably associated with more than one part of the body. Sagittarius with the thighs, but what about the Ajna center for that long distant vision? Capricorn with the skin and with the knees, but it's also strongly involved with the Ajna center and with the head center and so forth. So there are different lines of relationship here. And therefore, the signs of the zodiac will definitely have their effect upon individual people, but they may be a little bit unrealized at first until some knowledge of astrology is gained. They bring about changes in his life focus and in his centers, just as they have wrought corresponding changes in three planetary centers. Now, how it is that these, in the three planetary centers, namely, not the outer centers, but Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity. In view of this, certain basic ideas can here be emphasized. I think before long he can begin to segue into the discussion of the astrology of the various countries and cities on the earth in kind of an extension of his work in the destiny of the nations. Certainly for anybody who's interested in the potentials of the place where they live, the Tibetans' work on destiny of the nations and a certain section in esoteric astrology, I would think would be indispensable. How he derives that does remain to be seen. The influence of Capricorn via Mercury will have a dominant effect in the human kingdom, which is itself a planetary center, and in a way, let's not get rid of the text so fast. From one perspective, let's say, a throat center. Notice how often we do change perspectives. That's one of the beauties of Master DK's teaching. Something is true from one perspective and yet not entirely true from another. It's like the constellations. From one perspective, they appear in a certain way, but if we had removed ourselves to a different planet altogether, what we call the various constellations would look entirely different and perhaps carry their own mythology and influence for those who see them from that particular perspective. Everything is relative in that sense. It all depends on your angle of vision, and meaning comes with an angle of vision. Possibly the all-seeing eye sees things from all angles of vision simultaneously, and thereby actually achieves an understanding of the truth of things. The individual disciple will therefore respond to this Capricornian influence most easily because we're dealing with humanity, which is individual. Humanity is still individual in its attitude and not group conscious. It will constitute a line of least resistance. I mean, you know, ambitious humanity, the selfish integrated personalities under Capricorn and in a way under Cancer and Leo too, these selfish personalities strive to rise. They strive to rise to the top of the heap. This is not the same as the quest for group consciousness of the soul that is to be found on the mountaintop of Capricorn, ruled hierarchically by Venus, which induces group consciousness later in the process. It did induce individuality in the very beginning, but think of what we were emerging from the animal state. Eventually, Venus has that seed of individuality blossom into group consciousness. And then the true era of brotherhood can be expressed because we are dealing then with the third decanate of Aquarius and with the hierarchical ruler of Capricorn. All is seen in group form. So the individual disciple will therefore respond to this Capricornian influence most easily. And we are told that as far as the third ray goes, it is Capricorn that gives disciples the third ray, and we're dealing with the third ray line of descent from the Pleiades to Capricorn, Mercury, and so forth. All of them have a strong third ray component. Mercury is not discussed as a third ray planet, but I believe that in the highest sense, in terms of its monad, I believe it is third ray. I can always relate Mercury more fully to the previous solar system and Venus in its intended expression more fully to the present solar system, which doesn't mean that both of them were not present in the past solar system. It will constitute a line of least resistance offering opportunity. If Saturn offers opportunity, so does Capricorn. It's a higher octave of Saturn, as well as the chance of possible disaster if wrongly handled. So he says the best and the worst of people, you know. It's possible to strive to get to the top in a very individual way and not consider one's group brothers and sisters or fellow human beings. We do have a number of countries ruled by Capricorn and in the personality, and one, Finland, actually ruled by Capricorn in its soul. And we'll see in this period when Pluto, the lord of the underworld in a way, passes through Capricorn, which itself rules the lower depths from one perspective. In the Capricorn myth of Hercules, he has to descend into hell, face the three-headed dog, Cerberus, and then he has to free Prometheus, who is in hell as well. The solar angels have somehow descended into the nether region on the redemptive mission, and those who are becoming more like solar angels have to free them and take their place, in a sense. So a chance of possible disaster if wrongly handled. Right response will lead the disciple nearer the door of initiation. Wrong response will take him back into the depths and crystallization of concretion. My friend Philip Lindsay did an analysis of the Nazi leaders and found how many of them had the Capricorn moon, and Hitler foremost among them. We see the great negativities of Taurus, Capricorn, the choice in his Libra ascendant, and the power of Saturn in Leo at the top of the chart. Just think of what that can mean in terms of Shambhala, how we've been studying it. Leo, Saturn, Shambhala. But it was an inversion of the Shambhala force in its materialistic guise that he promoted, so he became a man of great will, influencing other selfish men of will to lead their country astray. And now there seems to be, in the revival of the Nazi ideology on some, by some people who feel that the Nazis did not finish the job. And maybe what we have there is reincarnated individuals from that movement. Disciples who respond to the influence above mentioned will necessarily be largely conditioned by their rays, egoic and personal. The monadic ray is perhaps not the most conditioning ray at this time, although it is fundamentally conditioning of the etheric body, and hence the physical, and of, well, and of the astral body, because it's located two from above, as the astral body is located two planes from below, and of the mental body. The ray of the mental body is much conditioned by the ray of the monad, DK tells us. So the monad does have some sort of pervasive, if subtle, effect which can be read by those who can read. But people will not notice that, and mostly the egoic or personal conditioning will prevail at first. First-rate disciples will, for instance, respond to the Shambhala influence transmitted from Leo and Saturn. I mean, you know, I just never realized to this extent that that elevated Saturn in Leo in Hitler's chart really is shambolic, really. I mean, other people might not have responded in that way, but he certainly did, having, as DK says, strong Leo in his chart. And from the conception chart angle, it's possible that he was conceived in Leo since he was born in Taurus, which would be another Leo prominence, the sun in the sign Leo in the conception chart, though there are those who are studying these matters, and it may not be Leo. I mean, there are individual variations. Okay, so first-ray disciples, and by that DK means those whose soul is on the first ray. When he talks about who a disciple really is, he doesn't mean their personality ray. If you're a second-ray disciple, it means your soul ray is the second ray. Will, for instance, respond to the Shambhala influence transmitted from Leo and Saturn more easily than will second-ray disciples, but we have to remember that all disciples respond to Saturn and that Leo is deeply connected with the second ray because it's the second of the fire signs relating to consciousness. And so there will be methods of transmission via Neptune because, in a way, Leo will be the ruler of Leo. The sun will be veiling Neptune for those who are esoterically responsive. So there's always ways to get the energies through. These will, in their turn, react more rapidly and consistently to the hierarchy, transmitting energies from Pisces and Uranus, and these energies will be the regenerative and renewing energies. And we're talking about, you know, the forces of restoration, the forces of enlightenment, the blinding sudden light of Leo, to which Uranus has some relation, that flash of illumination, and also the forces of reconstruction in Gemini. All of these forces can be seen as hierarchical and related to Uranus. Restoration, construction, and of course the illumination. These are all sponsored by the hierarchy. The above facts will demonstrate the nature and quality of the response of disciples on Ray 1357 and Rays 246. Largely either the Shambhala line from the Great Bear or the Sirian line from the star, or maybe the system of Sirius, sometimes it's called a constellation. And this must always be borne in mind as being true of disciples, of all men, and also of nations. So this is what we would call the basic dichotomy. Then according to the response, so will be the evocation of the activity of the centers, or a center. The DK is telling us that all of these triangles together represent the past, present, and future of humanity and reach the individual human being, the individual disciple, and that's why they're so important. So these triangles will evoke response from various of our centers. We've already seen in the tabulation the first ray will evoke the crown and the base of the spine, and the second ray the heart and the solar plexus, and the third ray the ajna and the throat, leaving the sacral center as a temporary evocation and the material center out of the picture. But, and this is the point of major importance, all disciples must at this time seek to find their dominant reaction in a planned response to the influence of hierarchy and the energies transmitted by it. And this has to do with whatever the ray of the disciple may be, because we're dealing with the reappearance of the Christ and the externalization of the hierarchy and the emergence of the second ray soul of our planetary logos. This is a matter handled by hierarchy, and disciples are not yet in a condition, no matter what their ray is, really to approach Shambhala with the same intensity that they should be approaching the hierarchy. Some try, but it oftentimes doesn't end well. As a general rule, the impact of Shambhala force, particularly in the case of disciples on Rays 1357, will be of a personality nature. There is a direct connection. There is a direct connection between the monad and the personality. It's like the two ends of the stick, you know, from a certain point of view. What you have there is the sun sign representing the personality symbolically, and the point opposite the sun sign in any particular life representing the monad. So there is a way in which oftentimes this force may bypass the soul, as it did in the case of the German leaders, and it will stimulate the personality and nature, and will create ambition and selfishness and hardness, and unless modified by soul energy. It is the stimulation of the heart center with the consequent control of the solar plexus center which should be the planned result. Our desire nature, which the Buddha came to correct, should be elevated into the group conscious heart, the altruistic, compassionate, sensitive heart, rather than the note of harshness, which we read about in the old commentary associated with the solar plexus center and with Mars. The heart must dominate the solar plexus by the withdrawing of its energies to the heart, and this is for disciples on all the rays. This has to be understood. I guess sometimes we get ambitious and we want to find our fast way to Shambhala, to the greatest center, which simply indicates that it is our personality that's being affected, because the personality is number one in that sense. It is isolative. It has its eyes upon itself. It seeks its own aggrandizement unless influenced by the heart and by group consciousness and by the hierarchical vibrations. So there's the statement that no man cometh to the Father except through me, which means that if you want to reach the Father, you have to go through the Christ aspect. And we might reverse that, but say the Father cannot safely come to any man except through me. There are direct Shambhala impacts occurring, but then ideally they would occur upon a soul-infused personality that had already absorbed the soul energy and could then be trusted to respond to the Shambhala influence in a group-conscious manner and unselfishly. So we really need that heart center and solar plexus, if we can possibly stimulate these centers and elevate the normal personal lunar solar plexus reaction, which is subdiaphragmatic and selfish, ruled by Mars, which is the planet of selfishness. We need to transform that into a Neptunian center, which rises into the heart, which can also be seen as ruled by Neptune as well as by Jupiter and the Sun. One can wonder whether Neptune is not a very powerful ruler of the heart center, as it rules the Buddhic plane, and the heart center is that which connects one to the Buddhic plane, just the way the head center connects to the Atmic plane. Well, there's such an interplay of energies and so much cooperation between them. We have really no idea of all the many energy threads. All right, so this looks to me like we've reached the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 119A, page something, page 451, I guess. And we will be beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure 119B, page 451.